Is it possible to believe both in science and an all-knowing, all-powerful creator? Our guest this hour says no. Our guest is a self-described atheist and the author of A God That Could Be Real: Spirituality, Science, and the Future of Our Planet. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest says that instead of more traditional views of God, we should look to human society and the well-being of the planet for a deity that could be real. We'll talk about her philosophy and how it might reconcile spirituality with scientific thinking and 21st century challenges. And we'll welcome your views and questions for her. Do you believe in God, or are you a non-believer? Do you think it's possible to believe in science and also believe in God? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Nancy Ellen Abrams is the author of A God That Could Be Real: Spirituality, Science, and the Future of Our Planet. She is also the co-author of two books on cosmology and, with her husband, astrophysicist Joel Premack. Good morning.
Good morning.
So you are a self-described atheist. You were an atheist starting in your teenage years. What made you write a book about the nature of God?
That is the question, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I'm not an atheist now. I was an atheist because I thought that the only option for God was a kind of a magical being in the sky that could know everything, control everything, created the universe, etc. And with regard to that version of God, I was and I do remain an atheist. But what happened to me was that I got into a 12-step program to recover from an eating disorder, and I was told that I needed to have a higher power or a God of my understanding. And, of course, I didn't have one, and I didn't even think that those things were worth thinking about. But I'll tell you that trying to recover from any kind of an addiction is just a gigantic motivation. So I tried. I really thought about it. And I thought about it for years, and I thought about it while I was working on these books about the modern picture of the universe, which is really quite extraordinary, very counterintuitive. And so I was trying to reconcile this new picture of the universe that my husband and his colleagues were working on with the idea of a God of my understanding. And I did come up, after many years, with an idea that allows God to be real, absolutely real, in this scientific universe, and yet just as powerful and divine, in some sense, as any other image.
So describe that God.
I would be happy to. First of all, let me step back a little bit and say that it's very important for the listeners to understand that you can't know what's possible or impossible. You can't know what's real or not real unless you know what universe you're living in, because the universe determines what's real. And the universe that we are living in has only been discovered in the last 30 or so years. So most people have not even heard of it. They certainly were not educated to understand what universe we live in when they were in school. Most people think the world and everything is made of atoms, but it turns out that everything we can see, all of the stars, the planets, the gas clouds, our galaxy, and all of the distant galaxies, hundreds of billions of distant galaxies, account for less than half of 1% of what's actually out there in the universe. There is this enormous competition going on in the dark between two invisible presences called dark matter and dark energy. And dark matter is pulling ordinary matter, that is, atoms, together, while dark energy is ripping space apart. And the competition between these two forces has spun the galaxies into being and therefore created the only homes for the evolution of life for the only place where rocky planets could form, the only place where stars will form. So the reason our universe is the way that it is because of this amazing thing that's going on in the background that no one knew about. And my husband is one of the people who created the theory that explains how this has happened. So he's been working on this for 30-some years, and I've been living with it that whole time and realizing that, wow, the universe is very different from what people expected. What does this mean for the rest of us? What does this mean for our picture of who created it? So what I did was I take science very seriously, and I don't think it's optional at all. You can't just say, well, gravity may or may not work. And the same thing is true of the nature of the universe as a whole. This happens to be a universe we now know that could not have been created by an intelligence, because there couldn't have been an intelligence in the beginning that was complicated enough to create anything. We live in a universe where in every way we see that complexity evolves from simplicity. There's always a simpler state, it evolves to a more complicated one. So basically what I did was I eliminated in my mind the things about God that were impossible, simply impossible. Because even though science can't tell us what's true, it can very often tell us what's impossible and rule things out. So I just ruled out the aspects of the popular God that were completely impossible, because I wanted to know what's left, what really remains. And what really remains is this. First of all, I eliminated the idea that God created the universe or was there in the beginning, because I believe those two things are in conflict with science. God can't be omniscient, because there's no such thing as omniscience. All of knowledge can't be known at the same time, because in different parts of the universe, if you're traveling at different speeds, if you're in different time frames, what's true is different. It's not as though it's a different perception. There actually is no set truth. Truth is local. So that was eliminated, and a few other characteristics. God can't violate the laws of physics. The thing is, for me, as an addict, I wanted a God that was present for me. I wanted one that could really make a difference in my life. I didn't care if it created the universe or not. I wanted a God that could help me do what I could not do alone. So that was really the kind of God I was looking for.
Yeah. So what, and, what that God is within us.
So
then?
what I found is this, that one of the really fundamental principles of science today, although it's still a bit controversial, not everyone's heard of it, is something called emergence. And what happens in the process of emergence is that whenever there is a complicated situation where there are many individual parts and they're all interacting together, those parts remain what they are when you look at them as individuals. But when you pull way, way back and you look at the whole system, something emerges from that complex interaction, which is qualitatively different from the parts that made it happen and which cannot be explained by them. So I'll give you a couple of examples of that. If you have, well, you're sitting in a room, the room is full of air molecules and they're bouncing all over the place and they're chaotically running all over the place. They have very complex interactions, but out of all of that complex movement, there emerges one temperature for the whole room. Where did the temperature come from? Because no molecule has a temperature. And yet the complexity of them interacting creates this temperature, which is what's called an emergent phenomenon. If you look at ants, if you look at a few ants, you really can't tell how these things live or what they do. But if you look at an ant hill of tens of thousands of ants working together, you have a colony. And the colony has far more sophisticated abilities than any of the ants do. The colony, for example, can adjust how many ants are out there foraging, how many are trash collectors, how many are doing child care, how many are have to be used as soldiers because there's some competing ant colony out there. The colony can do all that, and yet not one single ant in the colony understands it.
Yeah. So that's what brains. You know, that's ants working together, that's ants having some sort of structure and hierarchy. It's people working together. That's not God.
Right. Working together, not just working together. It's because this is not a consciously created thing. If people, for example, our economy is another emergent phenomenon. The economy is not created by people trying to impose laws of economics on each other. What happens is that as the trading between people gets more and more complex, certain rules emerge that control the economy, and we have to discover what those rules are. I mean, if you look at the global economy today, no one understands the rules. They're still trying. People don't even know what the rules are supposed to be about. So when there's an emergent phenomenon that's complex enough, like the global economy, it works by rules that not only do we not know, but we have to put effort into discovering what they are in order to function at our best in that emergent phenomenon. So what I'm saying about God is this, that God could only have emerged from us because complexity comes from simplicity. And I believe the aspect of us humans that God emerges from is our aspirations, and that this has been going on for tens of thousands of years. So I'm not saying that humans created God. What I'm saying is that in some sense, our complicated interactions, the interactions of our aspirations over so many generations, generate God. It emerges from us, and it continues to emerge as long as humanity exists.
Let's see what our listeners think about that. So there is not a God that created the universe, that instead God emerged from our aspirations. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Nancy Ellen Abrams. She is the author of A God That Could Be Real, Spirituality, Science, and the Future of Our Planet. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with a guest about God. We are reconciling religion and science, talking with Nancy Ellen Abrams, who says that the God that created the universe does not exist, but she says there is a God that could be real, that a God that emerged from us, emerged from our aspirations. What do you think? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. So, Nancy, give us a little better picture of this God that emerged from our aspirations. Give us a better picture of what this means about who God is.
Yes. Let's put it this way. Almost all the things that really affect us, that shape our lives, are things that are abstractions created by earlier generations of humans. So what really affects your life is not the solid objects that are around you. It's, for example, your religion, art, science, technology, agriculture, cooking, language. All of these things are practices or discoveries, really, of our ancestors made over many, many, many generations. And all of them are emergent phenomena. The thing is that we are, in some sense, like the ants, we are part of a larger organism, and that's how we function the best. You mentioned again that I believe that God did not create the universe. That's true. What I believe is that there's something out there that's 13.8 billion years old, and out of it evolved our galaxy and our planet and us and so forth. But if God had not emerged later from us intelligent beings, that universe would have been unknown and meaningless, just as it is to the other animals. That this is really something that separates us from the other primates, and that is that we are aspiring beings. The other animals don't do this. They don't try to create a better life for their children or try to give meaning to the events of their lives. But we do, and we always have, and that may be what made us human. And all of meaning, not just the meaning of God, but all of meaning, the very idea of language that we can pass on culture, all of that is a collective creation. So you can say that a God that emerged from our aspirations actually is the creator of all that. God is the creator of the meaning of the universe, not the physical universe itself. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you have this point of view, there is never going to be a scientific discovery that will ever threaten you, because science is also an aspirational activity. It brings us into contact with God. And if God is emerging from us, it means each of us is in direct contact with God all the time, simply by being human. And when we aspire to live in the best way we possibly can, we are uplifting God, and vice versa.
Julie emails, this is very interesting, but I'm curious to know what this means in terms of the afterlife.
Well, what it means in terms of the afterlife is that we have to look at ourselves in a different way. People are always trying to say, what happens after I die? But they don't really even understand what happens before they die. They don't know what it is that they're saying is going to continue or not continue. The fact of the matter is, the only thing we know that happens after we die is that we become ancestors. We become part of the lives of the people who live after us, and our influence extends throughout the future of our planet. So we need to become the kind of ancestors that would be honored, because we can enjoy that pleasure now. In many societies, ancestors were esteemed and honored, but in our society, that hardly ever happens. We don't have that kind of an outlook, but we could. We can have the pleasure of being honored ancestors now if, when we make decisions about what to do, and I especially apply this to the political level, I think this should be a criterion of every political decision made by all leaders. What would honored ancestors be doing now? So what should we be doing now that will make us honored ancestors in the future? That criterion would change all of the world. That would transform the way that we make decisions and the way that we value what we're doing. Right now, people are making decisions quite short-term and leaving devastating consequences for the people who will follow us.
Let's take some calls. We have Frederick in Appleton. Hi, Frederick.
Hello, Joy. Thank you so much for taking the call. I love your show. First of all, I'm very interested in cosmology. I'd recommend Lawrence Krauss's book, Universal Nothing. I'm trying to understand it more myself. My question for the author is, does it really help kind of defining God into some type of corner? It seems a lot of authors are using the term, but because, you know, the billions of people around the world, for the most part, have a preconceived notion of what, you know, historical meaning of an interventionist theistic conception of God, you know, why do we have to stick to that terminology? I'll take the comment off the air. Thank you.
That's a really good question. You don't have to. What I'm trying to explain in this book is that there is an emergent phenomenon in the universe as we now understand it scientifically that has enormous power over us, and which we affect with every decision we make and every aspiration that we actually raise to fruition. And that emergent phenomenon, I'm calling God, because that to me is the most godlike thing that could actually exist in the universe. You don't have to call it God, but you do have to recognize that it's real. It does need a name. I know that some people are really allergic to the word God, and I was myself for many years of my life. I just thought it was just a misleading sort of magical notion, but I have really come to understand that God is probably the most powerful concept that humans have ever created. It has been in our lives for tens of thousands of years. Every child over the age of 2 or 3 knows the word, may not have a very sophisticated definition of it, but that's not the point. Everyone thinks they know what it means. You can't just erase a concept like that from people's minds. You cannot. And either we allow the people who refuse to change their definition of God, who hold on to a very old, pre-scientific, impossible version of God, allow them to control this powerful concept, or we take it back and redefine it to be of use in the world that we actually live in, and the difficult, very scary future that we are heading into. You know, as climate change goes on, there's going to be a lot of chaos and injustice, because coastal areas will flood, a lot of land will become useless, maybe drought will force people out. There's going to be a lot of conflict. There's going to be conflict over what to do about it, over whether we can do anything about it. In this kind of a world, we cannot allow our leaders to be relying on images of reality that have nothing to do with the world we actually live in. In biblical times, they believed, first of all, that the earth was unchanging, that it was flat, that it was covered by a dome which held up the cosmic waters. And the dome, in fact, which was called a hard thing in the Bible in Hebrew, was many, many years later in the King James Version translated as the firmament. But the firmament actually literally meant a firm thing that would hold up the water, because in the beginning, in biblical times, they believed the whole universe was just water, and God had to make a space in the middle for the creation. We know we don't live in that universe. That universe, it was beautiful in its time, but it's over. We need a way of thinking about God that allows us to absorb the scientific discoveries that are being made now and allows us to make decisions that will help us to survive in the world we're actually in.
We have other, let me take another caller, Katie in Green Bay. Hello, Katie.
Hi, oh my gosh, what a fascinating, fascinating conversation. I'm just, I'm so thrilled to be hearing this. Thank you both so much. I've recently had several conversations with friends and family in the wake of the recent Easter and Passover holidays and the multitude of programs on, you know, History Channels and the Smithsonian and a number of different contexts for religion as it pertains to science, as it pertains to history, as it pertains to people's interpretations of how to live their lives, not to mention recent political conversations. But certainly everyone I've spoken with has had an instance in which he or she has ended a relationship either on, you know, Facebook or with, you know, close family or friends over a difference in, you know, personal values as they pertain to religion. Several conversations involved, you know, logical, thinking, science-based people saying that they couldn't wrap their minds around seriously being involved with somebody who didn't believe in evolution or believed that the world began when, you know, mere thousands of years ago versus millions. And I'm just curious what, Nancy, your experience has been with this, and to think of you and your husband conversing about your experience with addiction and turning to religion for your own more spiritual sense of salvation, and how do you reconcile that? And again, the difference in, you know, loved ones' opinions about either hot button political issues or, you know, any number of things that your religion, your spirituality, your personal values don't necessarily jive with.
Thanks, Katie. Nancy?
Yes, you're right. That is a big problem. And we need a new way of thinking about science and religion that doesn't put them at odds with each other. We do have this problem right now where it seems that scientists are saying that you have to choose between science and religion. It can't both be right. And I want to say that that is far too sweeping. It's a wrong choice. It's not a necessary choice. There are, however, some aspects of religion that definitely conflict with science. And what my book is trying to do is to show that those aspects that conflict with science are actually not important. Those are not the crucial aspects of God that we really care about. What we really care about is to have a God that can nurture our aspirations, that can give us the strength to do what we can't do alone, that can bring us together with other people in community. These are all things that don't require a God that created the universe. The thing is, you can divide the anti-scientific aspects of religion from the really important aspects, and you can keep the really important aspects. And one of the things I do in this book is I explain how you can renew your religion exactly that way. There is no reason that...
Well, I think we've lost our connection with our guest. Sorry about that. We will call her back. We are talking with Nancy Ellen Abrams. She is the author of A God That Could Be Real, Spirituality, Science, and the Future of Our Planet. Talking about reconciling religion and science, talking about her philosophy that there is not a God that created the universe. She says God is the meaning of the universe, that God emerged from our aspirations. And so we are talking about reconciling spirituality, scientific thinking, and applying it to 21st century challenges. She mentioned climate change as one of those, and we'll talk a little bit more about that as well. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Okay, we've reestablished contact with our guest. Let me just do a reset and ask you the question, Nancy, in terms of what does your real God mean for people who are devout in their religions?
I think that you can think about God in many ways in any religion. And everyone I have spoken to in any religion, they do not agree 100% on what God is with anybody else. Everyone has a different set of words they use to describe it. And I think it really doesn't matter whether you're Hindu or Christian or Jewish or whatever. This emergent phenomenon that I'm talking about exists, and it's real. And if we want to live in the real world, we can hold on to the good parts of our religions. We can hold on to the symbols and the community and the rituals and the core values. We can hold on to all of those things and still have a God that actually exists in the universe, which it seems to me should be a lot more attractive. It certainly is more attractive to me than one that is supposedly assigned to a mythical realm that doesn't really exist outside the universe.
And then from the atheist perspective, though, why do we have to have anything that we call a God? Couldn't an atheist say that, I aspire to do good. I will do good. I have a moral compass, but I don't have to call a deity or something a god.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. An atheist, yeah, they can say that. But everything that you just said is only on the individual size scale. if an atheist looks at their society and says, well, what's going on the larger size scale? How come we all think we have these great values and yet we're not implementing them? How come we are watching the world overheat and we're watching people continue to do the things that are destroying our ecosystems and we don't do anything about it? Why? I mean, atheists care about these things too. They don't just care about their individual belief or not believe in God. They care about the world. On the level of the collective, we need to understand much better what is going on. Why is this happening? And one of the reasons that it's happening is that we live in an enormous culture with connections around the world, which never happened before, and we don't have any common ground. What makes a culture is that people in it agree on what reality is and basically how things work, and often what their religion should be and what God expects of them. But when you get to the point where we are now, where the whole world is connected over the World Wide Web, and yet we don't have any common values, what we get is chaos and a lot of violence. We need common ground, not to be the same. We're never going to be the same. Diversity is probably the greatest thing about our whole species. But we need enough common ground that we can cooperate to stop the huge problems that are facing us globally. And one of the things we need to agree on is a scientific worldview. It is the only thing that is equally true for everyone around the world. Now, once you adopt a scientific worldview, certain things follow from that. You have to eliminate the things that are impossible, but you don't have to eliminate the things that are of value to human beings, because we're still the same human beings that we were thousands of years ago. We still have the same needs, psychological needs. But we know so much more. So what I'm trying to do is to just bring God into the real world. I'm trying to say that God can be real. If you ask people who are holding on to an old-fashioned idea of God, but is your God real in this universe, they will hem and haw, because I've done that. No, it's not real in this universe. It's real outside the universe. Well, it's in my heart. Well, this, that. No, I want a God that's real in this universe, because I need it. Because when I pray as an addict, I need to know that I'm connecting to something. I need to know that. It helps me a lot. And, well, that's my answer to your question.
We got to take a short break, and then we'll take more calls for our guest, Nancy Ellen Abrams, author of A God That Could Be Real, Spirituality, Science, and the Future of Our Planet. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking with Nancy Ellen Abrams, author of the book, A God That Could Be Real, Spirituality, Science, and the Future of Our Planet. Our next caller is Dave in Eau Claire. Hello, Dave.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I just want to make a few quick points, and then I'll listen to your reactions maybe off air, but off the phone. But you know, first of all, the theologian Thomas Aquinas, I think, is someone who came up with a lot of interesting ideas on God and creation. And one of them, if I get his concept correct or can convey it on the radio quickly here, is that how could something, you know, that everything's been created, well, what did that come from? You know, every action has a reaction. And so I think that doesn't really coincide well with your guest concept. And then as well, I think that Genesis and evolution can be incongruence, because if Genesis is inspired by God, I mean, we can't really understand. I think Genesis just has so much depth. From my point of view, they're together and they can work together really well.
All right, because those are two huge areas, where did everything come from? How was everything created, Nancy, if there wasn't some God doing it?
Okay, well, first of all, let me say that the phrase "in the beginning" is really no more precise than "once upon a time." In the beginning is the way that humans begin a story. And the end is the way that humans stop telling a story. There's no objective reality to the beginning or the end of any story, including the story of our universe. So what science does is we go back. We work back from the present, and so in 1965, it was basically confirmed that there was a Big Bang, and the evidence was discovered. And then in the 80s, there was another theory introduced, and as years went by, evidence supported it too. It's called cosmic inflation. It explains what happened in the moment before the Big Bang that laid out the initial conditions so that the Big Bang could happen as it had been discovered. And as science progresses, it moves backwards. So the question then is, well, what caused cosmic inflation? Now, there is a very sophisticated mathematical theory that explains what could have led to cosmic inflation. It's called, the theory is called eternal inflation. But what I want to say is that for that, it's going to be very hard to get evidence, because we have to get evidence from outside our universe, and we don't know how to do that yet. It's not impossible, but it certainly is impossible by what we understand today, because you just don't know how to get the evidence to support it. So the way that science progresses is we work from the center that we understand, and we push outward. We push outward toward the past and outward toward the future and outward in all directions. So trying to start a story with, in the beginning, this is what happened, is a big mistake. It's a complete misunderstanding of what the word beginning even means. It's just a story. So I think that we can say that we're discovering more and more about the story of our universe. We don't know the very beginning, because that is not a meaningful concept. If eternal inflation is right, then it might be that it started an eternity ago, which means that it may have always been. Or it may have started in the past and be eternal into the future. We don't know. That's open. It's a scientific question. Now, what we do know is that when Genesis was written, that was the story of the creation of the flat earth. It was a story. It starts out where God is hovering over the waters. It's not like nothing was there. Water was there. God and water was there in the beginning of the story. And that water was what all of the ancient peoples, going back thousands of years before the Bible, in Sumer and ancient Egypt, all believed was what filled the universe. It was just water everywhere. And then God opened the space in the waters, put down a flat earth to hold down the lower waters, put up the dome to hold up the upper waters, and put the creation in the middle. We know that that is not what we live in. And the whole description of the creation in the first story of Genesis, I'm not talking about the Adam and Eve story now, I'm talking about the 6 days of creation story. That story doesn't make sense if you think of it as how God actually proceeded. Because, for example, the sun, moon, and stars are not created until the day after the plants. Well, everyone knows that plants need sunshine. You can't have plants without sun. But that's not what Genesis is saying. Genesis was basically saying, because that was the order of the gods in the Babylonian week, that is, the god of agriculture came before the god of astronomy in their week, what the Bible is saying is the Hebrew God claims all the powers of the Babylonian gods. It was not about literally how people thought the universe was created. It was about the powers that they were giving to their God. You have to read these things historically. You cannot read the Bible without looking at its historical context, because it's not self-consistent. To understand what it means, you have to see what people intended it to mean at the time.
Yeah. You know, our caller was going to say, I'm sorry, just because we lots of callers and lots of territory still cover, but he was going to go on to say that you're putting man in place of God and elevating man, and I think he has a problem with that. Do you have a problem with that?
Yes. Well, I would if I were elevating man, but I'm not elevating man. What I'm saying is that, and I realize that emergence is a very tricky concept, and maybe most people haven't even heard of it, let alone really understand it. But what emerges in an emergent phenomenon, what comes out of the complexity beneath, is something completely new, qualitatively different, and utterly unpredictable from what went on below. So, for example, we have a lot of neurons. We have a lot of cells in our brains. And somehow from that, what emerges is consciousness, which is qualitatively so different that you don't even need to know about neurons in order to use your consciousness. And I'm saying that God is like that. God is something utterly new, qualitatively completely different from humanity, and yet arose from the complex interactions of humanity's aspirations. It is qualitatively different. It's not man.
Let's go to Ron in Madison now. Hello, Ron.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I went to college back in the late 60s, early 70s, and at the university I was at, I attended a Bible study that was led by a professor of astrophysics who did not become a Christian until he was working on his, until he was in graduate school, because he had no use for faith. He was a scientist. Everything was facts. So someone pointed out that the mathematics he used was based in faith. What I've noticed over the last 50 years is that scientists tend to ignore the faith in their own disciplines, including the scientists you have with you today. Her whole premise is based on the faith that she had developed on her own. I think that one of the biggest problems we have between science and religion today is that scientists don't recognize the faith, whether it's evolutionist or whether it's, when I say evolutionist, I mean the strictly evolutionist science like biology and that sort of thing, or as a physicist like this one.
Yeah, all right, so Nancy, where is your faith?
Well, first of all, I think that a lot of people don't realize that science is a totally faith-based endeavor. I mean, if you don't have faith that there is a hidden truth in the universe and you can find it, you're not going to be doing science. That science is the faith that there's a deeper level and I personally can help to penetrate it. I mean, I think that's a fantastic faith in the universe. It's not faith in a biblical God necessarily, but faith is something that people experience and that helps us become the kind of person we maximally can be. It doesn't have to be in one sort of God or one sort of symbol. It can be in many different things. And the caller is right that faith is important. The question is, where are you going to put it? Are you going to put it in something that really could change the world, or are you going to put it into an image that is going to prevent you from seeing how the world actually works?
Now, let's talk a little bit more, as we are running out of time, on how this God that could be real can help change the world. What do you see happening?
I'm sorry.
In changing the world, how do you hope the God that could be real will help us change the world?
Okay. Well, the number one thing is that it just eliminates the whole problem of science and religion being at each other's throats. They don't have to be. That once we accept that science has a certain, science can do certain things, and if we just accept the results, if we believe the evidence, we can see God in a new light. We can find a God that works for us and keeps us coherent. The thing is that if you've ever fought an addiction or pretty much anything about yourself that you don't like, you will understand the idea that feeling torn apart inside is a really horrible place to be. And to find a peace of mind, to find a kind of deep coherence between yourself, what you believe, and what you know, is just the greatest goal. And that's the goal that I've been seeking, and that is the goal that this God delivers, absolutely delivers. Because it recognizes our need to be part of something much larger than we are, something far more powerful, something generally benign, but not all the time, because everybody's aspirations are part of this God, including those with bad aspirations. But I think that on balance, humans are fundamentally good, and their aspirations are the best part of them. So that's why we have succeeded in taking over this planet, and no other species has. So I think that it really liberates us. An emerging God allows us to have a real God that we can pray to, that we can talk to, that we feel empowered by, and yet it allows us to accept and work with all scientific discoveries and really try to cooperate around the world based on science, which is exactly the same for everybody on this planet.
Rich in Rhinelander is with us. Hi, Rich.
Hi. I just came off a weekend with people that I love who believe that religion is a comfort to them, and they want and need a personal God. That is, they have a personal Lord and Savior. And I don't really see how this version of God accords with their idea of God.
This is much more of a savior in the real world, because people will not be saved as individuals if the human species is destroyed or allows itself to be destroyed. The way that we can continue on as, the way that we can achieve immortality is if our species continues. We could be the seed of intelligence in the whole galaxy. We don't know if there's any intelligence out there yet. And when you look at the history of Earth, you see that our planet is extraordinary. It's incredibly unusual. They've already discovered more than 3,000 extrasolar planets. There's not a one like Earth. We live on the jewel of the universe. If we think of ourselves only as individuals and what's going to happen to us as individuals, we remain extremely small. But if we think, what is going to happen to our species? How do we become part of this fabulous force that could be changing the galaxy? Then we start to see ourselves in a new way. And salvation for us, when we see ourselves that way, is collective. It means we try to keep our species going and developing and evolving as it could, because we are the jewel of the universe. That's the level of salvation I think really matters. I think if everybody looks at me alone, what's going to happen to me alone, then really as a species, we're just going to go down the drain.
So do you think many people will be receptive to your real God?
Well, you know, I'm really not trying to convert people who already have a view of God that works for them. I mean, I think that if your view of God makes you into a loving and wise and effective human being in this world, then keep it, because it's doing its job. But there are many people who are like me, who did not have that kind of a view, who saw only conflict or kind of emptiness in the view of God that we had been proposed. And so we either are agnostics or atheists. And I have discovered by trying to work my 12-step program that there's a tremendous amount of power in having a God of your understanding, but it has to be of your understanding or it won't work for you. So for people like me who were looking for something but didn't have one that made sense, did not have a way of thinking about God that made sense, this really makes sense, and it's powerful, and it opens up hundreds of doors.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Nancy Ellen Abrams is the author of A God That Could Be Real, Spirituality, Science, and the Future of Our Planet. Thanks to Christy Taylor and to Kayla Blado for producing and directing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. Tomorrow at this time, we will talk about the future of war and other violence in the age of drones, hacking, and new kinds of threats. That's the future of violence coming up tomorrow at this time. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.